They're coming to get you. They're coming for you, Barbara.
They're coming to get you.
Coming to get you, Barbara.
This is They're Coming to Get You. My name is Brent Verhue.
My name is Gavin Eddings. And Brent, I'm really excited. I got you a late night spot.
You got me a late night spot? Which one am I doing? Fallon, Conan, did you bring him back?
I did not. I tried to get you on Conan. He couldn't do it, but I've got you on Night Owl with Jack what? Delroy.
I've never, is that like Merv Griffin?
Yeah, it's Merv Griffin. Yeah, I got you on Night Owl with Jack Delroy. You're going to do a tight five before a girl who might be possessed by the devil comes on. Is that okay?
Oh, do I go on before the devil?
You're actually opening for the devil and not, oh. you're not on the show. You're actually the warm up comic for the crowd.
God damn, this gig sucks. Well, we may have some new listeners here because we don't normally cover like hyper new movies, but this is They're Coming to Get You. And as you saw in the episode title, we're talking about Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, Late Night with the Devil, which just premiered on Shudder on Friday, April 19th. It also came out in theaters in March. It's actually a movie, though, that had its premiere back in 2023. So I'm not going to know what year to put in the title of this.
Yeah.
When we put it back, I guess 2023 technically. So I guess I'll do that.
I only think movies come out the year that I see them. So I just saw Titanic, so I think it comes out in 2024.
or you think the movie came out in the year it was set in? You're like 1912.
Yeah, one of the two. But yeah, if you're just joining us, we have a whole back catalog of tentpole movies, the bigger names in the horror genre, and then we also have some shitty movies that we covered, like Thanksgiving and Jack Frost, and some niche ones.
Yeah.
So go back and check out our catalog. And as we release this, we're in the midst of our remake season. So we went back and watched some of the remakes of some of the bigger movies in recent years.
Yes, and actually something that was very exciting about watching this movie is we actually had, over on our Discord for our Patreon subscribers, we had a movie night and watched this movie with some of our Patreon subscribers. We watched this together, and now we're going to talk about it. So
yeah,
if you want to become a Patreon subscriber, patreon.com/ They're Coming to Get You. For just, we have a couple of tiers there. At our $8 tier, you get bonus episodes, you get episodes early, and you can do movie watch-alongs with us over on Discord.
Mm-hmm. And there's episodes that we don't release anywhere but over on Patreon. So there's, I don't know, 10 of those at least by now, maybe?
I think there's way more than 10 now. And also, I mail you a sticker. You get a They're Coming to Get You sticker as well at a $5 tier and above. Also want to give a shout out to some of our new Patreon subscribers. We got Ian, who joined at our free tier. We also got Scoopstronaut, who joined at our free tier. Thank you so much for joining us at the free tier. And want to give a shout out to Guy Who Invented Fire, who joined the $5 Nut and Run tier.
Damn, he's got fire money and he's only spending $5 on us? I don't know how you make money with fire, but
he did message us. He did message me on Patreon. I was like, I'm no longer a freeloading cuck. And I don't know. I didn't think about having all that fire money, though. Like, you got to be, I mean, fire is kind of in everything.
You know, that's generational wealth. He didn't invent the fire like his great grandpa did or something.
Down the old Ford Motor Plant, his grandfather discovered fire while welding on a tire. He's like, oh, how have we been doing this whole time?
Yeah. But thanks for being here nonetheless. And we just watched it. We just finished the movie night. And I watched this movie last night. So this is the second time I've seen it in 24 hours. I may have a little more insight into this movie, but you're fresh off this, Gavin.
I'm so fresh right now. My
fresh
brain
to death.
Yeah. I do want to say right now, the devil having a great year.
Never been hotter.
The devil's never been hotter. Guy Who Invented Fire, he is really helping the devil out right now.
Do you think that's the devil?
I don't know. I'm sending a sticker to him, and it did say hell was the address.
666 Devil Lane.
Hell, Pennsylvania.
Hell, what? Michigan's real, actually. That's a real town.
Is it Michigan where hell is?
Yeah, hell. I know a guy that lives there, and not the devil. He's a comedian. So. Oh, I just hiccuped on the show.
He's either in hell, Michigan, or in Georgia, because that's where the devil goes down to.
Fiddle fights. The devil went down. I don't know who he went down on, but he went down.
But the devil's having a big year. He's got a bunch of movies in theaters right now. He's also has Taylor Swift releasing new music. Mm-hmm. I've heard she's in league with him. She's carrying the Antichrist. So I've been told. So
cahoots, I believe, is the word.
Yeah. But we've got Immaculate with mm-hmm. Sydney Sweeney and her Sydney Sweeneys starring in that. Then we also have The First Omen out right now. Mm-hmm. And we have Late Night with the Devil. So right now, the devil is, I don't want to say he's like the it girl right now, but he's pretty in demand.
It's weird how the devil never really goes out of style. It's always a well you could go to. I know in like Hereditary, I guess it's a spoiler, but it's not necessarily the devil.
Yeah.
But it's like, or in, even in The Exorcist, it's Pazuzu.
Mm-hmm.
The demon, but we'll just call them all the devil.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I feel like we might get in trouble. We're gonna get some comments like, I listened for the first time, and you're not even separating the lesser deities from actual Beelzebub. So, yeah. Hard pass on this podcast.
Where's Bathmat? Guy who thinks it is Bathmat.
Oh, God. So many deities. But this movie, we watched it for the first time, and I had really high expectations. I heard nothing but good things about it. Mm-hmm. I know it premiered at South by Southwest last year, and let's say his name. Let's see if we can do it. David Dasmalian?
David Dasmachian. I had to look it up on YouTube, and I phonetically spelled it in my notes, and I already forgot how to say it.
Yeah,
David Dasmachian, I think.
Yeah, so we've said it right, I believe, one time, and now we are going to just call him David from here on out.
Oh, Double D.
I've always enjoyed him as an actor. I think he's always one of those great background character actors who's in a lot of things, but he's never really the star. And this, he is the star front and center.
He's a good leading man, because usually I'd be like, oh, that's the guy from The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
He's like the mentally disturbed Joker. Not the Joker, but a follower of the Joker, you know?
Yeah, and where Harvey Dent's like gonna shoot him in the back of an ambulance or something, and you're like, oh my God. That's
so,
where I know
him from. I've never like seen him on screen this much, but I guess the brothers who wrote and directed this, he wrote an article for Fangoria. I think it was about late night talk shows. This was from Wikipedia that I just read 10 minutes ago and forgot already, but how late night talk shows, I think, really lent itself to it was like live to tape, but it was in the 70s and 80s, you could kind of do some weird stuff, maybe have a medium on the show. I can't tell you when, you know, Jimmy Fallon's had a medium on the show. Maybe he had, you know, but he wrote an article about, you know, late night stuff, and they're like, hey, we want you in our movie. So that's how we got the gig, I guess.
Yeah, and Fangoria has a weird history with this script, apparently. Like, Fangoria wanted to make this movie as, like, a Fangoria Presents. Then apparently the COVID pandemic happened, and they sold the rights, but they still like really championed the script. So eventually it did get made, and this is a movie that is done by Cameron Carnes and Colin Carnes, two brothers out of Australia. So even though it's set in New York City, it's actually filmed in Australia by two Aussies down under. We have an Aussie supporter on the show, Dion. So thanks for sending this up our way.
I'm waving, and we don't record the video, so I'm waving.
It
was filmed in
Melbourne. I'm waving down my toilet that goes the other way.
The other way. It's filmed in Melbourne, not Melbourne. I've been told it's Melbourne, but it sounds dumb if you just say it that way, you know?
That's one of two cities in Australia that I know. I know Melbourne, and then I know Sydney Sweeney, Australia, as well, so...
Yeah, I don't think it's that particular city, but Yeah, it was filmed and you can't tell. Like, this is all pretty much takes place in one location. I don't know the. I'm looking at the see if the budget doesn't have the budget listed here yet, but I can't imagine it being too expensive. And I imagine the stuff that was the money in the movie was the special effects, which weren't like outrageous, you know.
No, it's not. Horror movies typically have very cheap special effects because it costs way less to make a show like The Walking Dead, which you just need maybe some CGI and some fake blood, as opposed to a show like Mad Men, where you have to make everything very period specific. It's way cheaper to buy fake blood than like a car for every old timey actor.
Yeah, and all the cigarettes for all the actors in the booth. That was real booze. Did you know that? You know how many people died of alcohol poisoning on the set of Mad Men?
And they're like, John Hamm, just keep drinking. He's like, I can't anymore. Like, it's got to be accurate. I need you to be real method. I need you to love the maker's mark.
Yeah. But it starts off like documentary style about Halloween night. And I don't remember what year they said, the 70s.
So this is 1977. Halloween night, 1977. It follows the show Night Owl with Jack Del Roy.
Just one year later, we'd have Michael Myers would return home.
Yes, he'd come home. Somebody taught him how to drive.
Someone had taught him how to watch late night television.
Real quick, do you remember growing up watching a lot of late night television?
Yeah, I would watch, we're both comedians, and I would watch Leno is the guy that I'd watch. And, you know, in hindsight, should have been Conan, but it was, because I would stay up late and watch Jay Leno and watch his monologue and the guest. And then eventually I would stay up later and later and watch Conan. But for me, it was Leno and Kevin Eubanks and the Tonight Show Band.
Jay, come on, man. Come on.
You crazy. You know, Kevin, you know what NBC stands for? No blacks on camera. Am I right?
Oh, shit. What? Damn it, Jay. I tell you.
That was a joke that he had on there.
Did he really?
Yeah, I remember it. Why would I make up?
Why would you make up such a specifically racially charged joke? I also grew up watching Conan. I grew up watching Conan. I also grew up watching Leno. I was a Leno guy over Letterman, which in hindsight... What?
I think we both feel that way because we're both from Indiana.
Yeah, we're like, but he went to Ball State. You know that? He went to Ball State.
He was a weatherman.
Yeah. But I grew up while watching Jay Leno and like, headlines. Look at this. This is headlines. This is it's just, he got so much mileage out of a segment that was just typos. It was just typos. Yeah. And we're like, every Monday night, shit, he's got those new headlines.
I did love headlines. And now they would just be memes. Like, it'd be like, here's memes with Jay Leno.
This one's called Pepe the Frog.
Yeah, but you know when you nut, but she keep sucking?
And then I would go and watch Conan. Conan is my favorite late night host of all time. Yeah. I idolize Conan so much. I think he was so unsafe when it came to the comedy he was doing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I hate Jimmy Fallon so much is because Jimmy Fallon took over for Conan, and Jimmy Fallon is just like the biggest ass kisser. Just he never challenges anybody.
I agree.
Yeah. I just
so funny.
I don't like Jimmy Fallon. I just think he's kind of a, He seems very phony. So Conan seems very real and just very authentic. And his comedy was, I swear, the comedy on this podcast and the comedy that has shaped me was 100% Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, I mean, I in the room that I'm recording is I have a wall dedicated to The Simpsons. And Conan was a writer on The Simpsons. And it's almost like nowadays when you say Conan's my favorite, everybody says Conan was their favorite. Because that's, I think, our generation. But... definitely for me, it's so almost absurdist humor to have, you know, the characters like the masturbating bear or the FedEx Pope, you know.
I remember for no reason, they just had vomiting Kermit.
Yeah. Vomiting. Just,
It's like, it makes no sense. It's just a Kermit the Frog vomiting everywhere.
Do you remember Little Jay Leno?
I don't.
If you Google it, there's not many images or videos because I've tried to find it, but it was a little person that looks exactly like Jay Leno. and he would just bring them out on the show, and they'd put them in a little car, like a Power Wheels car. And he'd come out, and he'd like do the head thing, like over-exaggerate with Leno.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, you know, like it was just, that's some of my favorite sketches, just when they bring out little Jay Leno. Oh, do you remember Shoeverine?
Yes.
It was just Wolverine, but he had shoes instead of claws on his hands.
I remember that and Preparation H. Raymond.
Oh, you got any lube?
Preparation H. Raymond. And then finally, one of my favorites, when Conan O'Brien went to the old-timey baseball game.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Oh, it's so good. So this podcast is now just us going, do you remember that Conan O'Brien sketch that was so good? And our audience going, I guess?
Our hot ones. I'm sweating because of my size, and you may have some deformity where you're sweating too, Kevin.
I'm just real swampy right now. But yeah, I love late night TV, and I think that this really captures the feel of late night TV in the 70s. Obviously, we weren't born yet, but I remember seeing all the commercials for like the Johnny Carson best of set. Mm-hmm. Look at him. And it just really captures that feel, and I love the look of 70s inspired horror movies. I don't love all 70s horror movies, but I love when it looks like the 70s for some reason.
Yeah, and it's very in line with the Conjuring movies.
Mm-hmm.
Where like you watch clips of Ed and Lorraine Warren on some of those talk shows. It's kind of set up that way. Now every show has a couch and a chair right next to the desk. But back in the day, it was just like three mid-century modern chairs and eight ashtrays everywhere.
Where everybody could just smoke on stage the whole time. And you're like, damn, did Jack Parr just go through 15 packs of cigarettes right now?
That's how he knew. They didn't have a timer. They just, once he got through a cigarette, they knew it was time for a break.
It just looked like a Shelley Duvall cigarette in The Shining. Like, when that ash hits the ground, that's when we know time is up.
Because I'm looking at pictures of the set from this movie. I love those 70s like rainbow colors. And it wasn't a rainbow, but it's like I don't know what you would call that design of just having those rainbows in the backdrop. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It just looks very much, it reminds you of like the later seasons of Mad Men. I don't know why I keep referencing Mad Men, but Mad Men does move into the 70s at some point. It looks like that very wood panel houses, very disco feel. And so I just love the look. Also, just the grittiness of the camera that they did. I love it. X did this also. X had that very 70s look and feel to it. So this I love 80s horror the most, but I love the look of 70s horror.
I was going to say, rewatching this, there was nothing about this movie that really took me out of the 70s vibe. I know it's not the 70s. Yeah. We're all pretending.
Yeah.
But it's nothing was like, well, that doesn't fit. It's not like you didn't see a Ford Escort in the back of the, you know, shot or whatever. Everything felt authentic to the era.
I didn't like when Doja Cat walked out and said, "Hello, I am Doja Cat, here to ruin the immersion of the 70s.
It is I, Doja Cat." That's how she announces herself.
We do, speaking of the art style while we're on it, there was some controversy, though, with this film. A lot of backlash because this movie apparently used some AI art.
Three images, apparently, right?
Yeah, and that's a huge deal right now with people fighting back against AI art, programs like Midjourney. There's another one I can't remember. And AI art, for me, I know a lot of artist friends. I think AI art is very bad. Us as performers, you don't want... Like, you don't want a program to be able to write better jokes than you.
Well, that ain't going to happen, dog.
You're very humble. But you've got AI art, a lot of controversy. And I guess when the movie debuted at South by Southwest, it didn't have the AI art in it. Mm-hmm. And then when it got re-released, it does. And I guess the directors came out and said, hey, we did experiment with AI art, but our graphic design department did go in and like edit it a little bit more. And the only thing that's AI art is the in-between bumpers when they would go to like a commercial and like "please standing by." So it's not the worst thing in the world, I guess, depending on what side of our Patreon Bailey said. It's either the biggest deal in the world or not the biggest deal in the world, depending on which side of Twitter you're on. Mm-hmm. So I think It's not really taking anything away. I guess I just don't know why they couldn't have somebody just like design it, because it's not like it was hard designed.
Yeah, they were drawings that I've paid people to do similar artwork, you know?
Yeah.
And it's definitely a conversation that we're going to have, because I think even today, at the time of this recording, we're recording it on 420, because you know how we do.
Oh, you know, Chief Keef, baby.
I think Drake, the rapper, released a diss track with AI Tupac and AI Snoop Dogg in it.
What?
That was a thing that happened. There was an AI George Carlin special that came out and was taken down, apparently, because Kelly Carlin, his daughter, was like, yeah, we're not doing this. So, like, and I listened to some of that special, and it's like, it's got that Carlin cadence and beat, but the voice wasn't there quite yet. But we've all seen images online that if you weren't aware that AI existed, you'd be like, wow, I can't believe that picture. Like, with people like us who have lived on the internet for a long time, we'd be like, well, look, that it has 13 fingers. That's not real.
Yeah.
But if you're like our parents, if you showed them that, they would think it was real. And yeah. Even sometimes I'm like, is that real?
Yeah. There was a huge controversy a few months ago because Taylor Swift, who is in league with the devil, if you didn't know that, PSYOP, such the Tortured Poetry Department, is a false flag operation to take down.
That's like eight things you just named. That's a gun grab too. So.
Taylor Swift famously very vaxxed. In support of ghost guns.
Ghost guns, yeah.
But Taylor Swift had some AI images that came out of her like pornography, basically. And it's very realistic, and it's like it's come a long way from like Photoshop nudes of like people that are like, well, that's fucking fake, but now you're like, well, goddamn, like you would hate for that to be out there and people think it's real. So AI is a huge deal right now, especially because it can like ruin careers. Even if you're just on TikTok, there's like people doing voice covers of like Patrick Starfish singing like songs from other people.
And Hank Hill doing like I Got Five on it. Like. It is crazy.
It's
like,
funny.
It's funny, but then we're at a certain point. That's like a big thing of the strike they just had for the Writers Guild, and there was like, yeah, we'll just let AI make the script. So, at what point do you take all the jobs away from us humans? You know?
Yeah. There's also it was also the Actors Guild too. Is like if you had like an extra, you could just like scan that extra one time, pay them $75, and then use them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, I don't know that you should boycott this movie, because again, what I'm told was three images. If they use more, I wouldn't know. But it's a conversation that we have to have, because even old David, don't ask me, Dastmalchian, that was a thing of, in conjunction with our amazing graphics and production design team, all whom worked tirelessly to give the film the 70s aesthetic we had always imagined. We experimented with AI for three still images, which we edited further and ultimately appear as brief interstitials, as you said, Gavin. But then David, Double D, went on to say, so I think they said it best. I stand with the crew and the cast, and I completely stand by this movie as a thoroughly original piece of work, so that many hours went into this incredible artistic craftsmanship to be set in this world. So it's a good conversation to have, and it's an important conversation. We've got to have it. So, you know, I don't think they were going to say any other thing besides that, because it is their movie, of course.
They'd be like, we're pieces of shit who did this. Yeah. Don't watch our thing that we made.
But it's you also, I know people that are like, fuck this, I'm not going to watch this movie. And that's a valid thing too. But at a certain point, when, you know, there's like, they're making air quotes, new Seinfeld episodes with AI. Where do we draw the line?
Yeah,
this type of stuff.
Yeah, I didn't feel bad watching this. I was not morally conflicted, like, oh, should I support this? Because I know artists and stuff. But I think it's disappointing that so much of these three images is taking away from this. I love this movie. I think it's great. I think it's very original. I think it's a great idea. So it's a bummer that using three AI images is taking away from the conversation of what a great movie this is. And in retrospect, they probably could have just had their design team do this, and then we wouldn't have this conversation.
Yeah, but maybe more people are talking about it because they did. Maybe that was the thing, too. I don't know.
Ooh, I mean, would any of us care about the movie Rust if Alec Baldwin hadn't shot somebody?
I have watched it 8 times. I don't know if it's out, but you know somebody's like, I got to see this goddamn movie now.
I got to see exactly where they shot. This is the scene right here when he shot that person and killed him?
Well, I've never even seen The Crow, which I know you love.
I love The Crow.
I know some people are like, I got to see The Crow, you know? Like,
it's like they didn't keep the scene in where he dies.
But no, if you watch it, you could see it.
Yeah.
It's like how they hang somebody in The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's real, where the Munchkin kills himself and they're like, leave it in. Our day's over. Our union says our day's over. So we're just going to have to work around this.
We're on film. You know, rather than leave the scene in where the Wicked Witch got caught on fire because all the toxic makeup.
Late Night with the Devil, though, it does take place on Halloween night of 1977, which is actually accurate. I guess Halloween night was on a Monday night in 1977. The directors went with that date because they say it's sweeps week. So if he wants to get his ratings up, he would kick off the week strong. And they said the only time Halloween was on a Monday was in 1977.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've never delved too deeply into it, but I think sweeps is when all the advertisers, they based all their current how much money they're going to give to advertise on that 1 week. So you want to have the highest rating so you can make the most money over the next of the course of 6 months or the next year.
Yeah. I worked in local news for 6 weeks as a morning camera op. And so I kind of grew up, my degree's in radio television. Your degree's also in radio and television, I believe.
Mostly radio, but yeah.
Yeah. So I have an RTV degree. So I grew up knowing a lot about news, and I love when the news does this, like local news. I remember one year for sweeps weeks, one of our big news stations here, 14 WFIE, they did a sweeps about a swingers club in Evansville. It was just like a whole week long about like this very innocent consensual sex club. And they're like, do you feel like it's bringing down the property value? And you're like, I mean, nobody's, well, I was going to say nobody's coming inside, but I don't know that for sure. Am I right?
Yeah, we didn't even know it existed till you said something. Like, that's how discreet it was.
But now you've added us, so I love local news sweeps week because it's always like the sexiest story. Like, did the mayor fuck a horse? Like,
and then it just cuts to his Twitter. No. Nay.
And then the horse says nay.
Yeah. Well, and I always people always bitch and complain about the media, and you know some of it is valid. Well, they'll be like, is there a silent killer in your house? Mort 11. Like, we're like, you could be dead. Mort 11. Like, they want you to watch. That's how they get you to watch.
There is a silent killer in my house. His name is Michael Myers.
Yeah, right behind you, right?
Oh no, he's right there. He's breathing real loud, but he hasn't taken the mask off in a while.
I'm surprised you hadn't said handyman.
Candyman.
Don't say it.
Go ahead.
The crux of the movie is that Jack Del Roy, the late night host, has never beaten Johnny Carson in the ratings, and he's come close. But that's kind of the crux of the movie because it's filmed documentary style, found footage, which it didn't really click in my head till I read reviews of it. You know.
Yeah, this is this combines found footage and also kind of like a mockumentary.
Archival footage, I guess.
Where it's basically taking place where it starts out kind of like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where it's like, we found this footage. This is from the only broadcast of this in 1977. Mm-hmm. And it's archival footage. It's also the actual broadcast itself. And they're trying to get ratings by bringing in like the spookiest shit. His wife gets cancer. He brings his wife on who has
lung cancer.
Yeah, who has lung cancer despite never smoking her entire life. And even before this happens, he's already trying to go almost a Jerry Springer route to increase his ratings, where he's having a military sergeant like spit in a guy's face and try to fight him for like dodging the draft. It's very that confrontational car crash TV that Jerry Springer would do.
We have black people here and also the KKK. Come on out, guys.
We also have a little person who's fucking both of them. And and the mayor is here with his horse. With
Jerry.
And then you... So his wife gets lung cancer. He brings his wife on to share about her condition. And he gets a ratings bump, but he still doesn't beat Carson when his wife has cancer. And that is when you know Carson is unstoppable. That's got to feel really shitty.
God, yeah. Like, it is probably one of those nights where Carson took the week off, so it was a guest host. But it's I don't know. Do you feel like he's bringing his personal life onto the show, but to have, like, her on and she's got the oxygen and she's has cancer, do you think his motivations were exploitative?
Yes, I think so. I think I think he very much loves his wife, but I think he also is like, well, life's given me lemons. Let's make lemonade. I mean, YouTubers do this all the time, especially when they do something like shitty, and then they're like, well, I've already said the racial slur, so might as well get some views from the apology. Because even if people don't believe their apology and they think they're full of shit, they're still going to watch the video and get them that ad revenue.
I guess I have integrity. You know, something feels just scummy and shitty when people do that.
Yeah, I like to think that I have integrity too, but I've never been in a position where it's like... Well, I was in a position where I had to choose integrity, where I was at a Comic-Con and I learned some information before it became public. And I could have easily, like, gone to YouTube and said, hey, I just heard this about a celebrity guest, but... I chose to be honorable and not fuck over my friend who is running the con, and also not, like, break the news of something that the person's family hadn't even been notified of yet.
And it would have been for clicks.
Yeah, and it's like, it wouldn't have really, it would have just been like, okay, I would have seen an uptick, and I could have left this fucking show and done my own thing, finally, and be free of you. But I was like, no. Going to have integrity.
I just would have replaced you with AI. I'm half cake already. So.
You would have replaced me with Hank Hill singing Puddle of Mud.
Everything's so blurry.
Everything's so blurry.
But yeah, it's like, I guess the vibe that it gets put off in the movies, he's having her on, and then it even says, even then, he was 1 point shy of beating Carson. It also points out that here's the conspiratorial angle, that he hangs out at some place called the men's only group, The Grove. And who knows, that shows footage of what they do at The Grove. Again, how do you get that footage if it's found footage and stuff like that? Doesn't matter. But it's like them doing rituals dressed up as animals. There's an owl prominently featured throughout the whole movie.
I like the, like, cult aspect of it, like the seedy, like, what's he really doing in his free time?
It's like a throwback to Bohemian Grove, which is the real conspiracy of the a group of people out of air quotes elites, Gavin. Get, like, Alex Jones would have lost his shit over this guy going to The Grove.
Is that The Grove where they also make the frogs gay?
They make them gay, they're sacrificing children, and buy my penis pills.
There is a scene when they're in the Grove, in the background, you can see Hillary Clinton take off her skin, and you can see her as the reptile that she is.
Yeah.
And she does drink a baby.
She was drinking, it was like one of those little straws was out of the neck.
Like Capri Sun?
Yeah.
That's my favorite feature of babies, is that they all have a straw just under, like, their soft spot. That's where the straw goes.
Yeah, you could do that there. But yeah, so, like, there's the they're planting the seed at the beginning of the movie of this some kind of mysterious group that he's been involved in, and the whole thing is his producer throughout the commercial breaks is talking about, we're just trying to save the show, because it's been, what, 5 or 4 years that he's been on the air, and he can't beat Carson. So that's kind of the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And he has a couple different guests on during his Halloween special that he wants to, like, get the ratings up. He has a guy named, like, kind
Chris
of like
two.
A... Christou? Christou?
I think it's Christou.
Christou, who is, like, one of those psychics that's like, I'm getting a, feeling like, is there somebody here who's, who, anybody here have a mother? Anybody
somebody
here?
With a dad? Papa?
Anybody with a dad or just, anybody who's alive here right now? Anybody?
I got a Meemaw. Yes, Meemaw.
Yeah, Meemaw. It's kind of, it reminds me of the show Crossing Over with John Edwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's just like, I feel something in the room right now.
If you ask enough questions where people there seeking information probably about their dead loved one, you'll find it and then they'll start crying, you know?
Yeah, it's confirmation bias. But like, does anybody else's dad ever tie their shoes? Oh my God, no. My dad worked at the plant for 15 years and every day before he left, he always tied his shoes.
Yeah, like he tied his work boots. He pulled by bootstraps is when he pulled himself up. But that's the guy is he's a some kind of mentalist who and a lot of these people when you watch whether it be this movie or any of those other like paranormal documentaries, they just say I'm a channel, I'm a conduit for the spirit world.
Yeah. I've always wanted to be one of those people and be like, anybody here recently lost a loved one? Okay, you have, yeah. So your mother right now, she is actually blowing Hitler in hell. I hate to break it to you. I'm like, oh my God, she's blowing Hitler? She doesn't even like mustaches.
Oh, mein penis.
It's just very, if you cast a wide enough net, you're gonna catch a sucker.
Yeah, well, there, you know, what did, was it P.T. Barnum or whoever said there's a sucker born every minute or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
So that's our first guest, and he talks to the audience a little bit, and this guy, the first guy he's talking to, just makes him look like an asshole. He's getting all the jokes in, but then he finds a mom and a daughter whose brother died, which, boy, can I relate. Thanks for bringing that up.
When he said your brother's name, I was like, Jesus, this movie is so good.
Chris Terhune, social security number 3. Four. It's like, God damn, this is very specific.
It was made for me. What? what an Easter egg.
So it seems like, yes, he lands it with the second guess, and what we find out later, maybe have been 5 or 6 attempts to get one. And then just before they cut to break, he suffers some kind of intense headache, mental pain, and he's being channeled by somebody, and he says the name Minnie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what I like what this movie does is it goes back and forth between the actual broadcast and then the backstage antics of like him talking to the producer. And one of our Patreon subscribers, MVB, pointed out that he liked the way that the show, the part that the show is like in color, and then the backstage stuff is in black and white to kind of help differentiate. So I thought that was a cool choice that the movie did.
And as we know from our show before, my brother told me that the black and white stuff on the Blair Witch was real. So I thought all the stuff in this, in the black and white, was real. So.
Then they bring out the second guest, and his name is Carmichael Haig. He is the nastiest hater. He is a former magician who is there to just disprove all this as bullshit.
He was that guy. You remember those specials in the 2000s or 90s where it was that masked magician who would go on Fox and just ruin all the goddamn magic tricks?
I love that.
I did too.
I got.
You know, every other magician was like, man, fuck this guy.
Oh, what was Behind the Magic? Behind the Magic show. Let me see what it was. Oh, it was called. Breaking the Magician's Code, Magic's Biggest Secrets Revealed. I love that because they did like fucking 8 of them and they're like, stop it. They're like, we just made this new trick up. Please stop showing everybody how we did it, you asshole.
And like the guy would be in a full luchador mask. like you could see no skin. He had gloves on. So I wonder if that guy's identity was ever revealed, who was like giving all the tricks away.
They did. In the last special, he revealed himself. he revealed himself to be, I can't remember who it was. Yeah,
Vince McMahon.
It was, oh my God. Who was it? Nathan Burton? Who was it?
A former magician who can't get work anywhere.
Yeah. The masked magician, his name was Val Valentino.
Okay.
In one of the specials, which one did he, he had four shows, and then I think he had on, like, the last show, he's like, hey, actually, was it a 13-part series? Jesus, I don't know. It had a bunch of episodes. But on the last one, he's like, it's me, Val Valentino, and we're like, who?
Yeah, like, even if it was David Copperfield, I'd be like, I know the guy's name. I couldn't tell you what he looks like. If there's not two of them and one doesn't talk, I don't know who it is.
Yeah. He said that he did those specials in order to get people more interested in magic again, which he did, but just like the wrong parts of it.
But the thing is also most people knew it was fake, but also we love wrestling.
Yeah.
And we know plenty of people that's like, no, but that was real.
They did a similar special behind them, like Breaking the Magician's Code. They did a similar special for professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Yep. Wrestling's biggest secret. She's a stunt granny. That's for a whole other episode probably. But yeah, I loved the Breaking the Magician's Code. I loved it.
So this guy is kind of that guy. He's a skeptic. And he offers anybody $100,000 for proof of the paranormal, which just sounded familiar to me, and I had to look it up, but that was a real contest thing that was offered from a guy named James Randi. He offered $1 million for proof of any paranormal or supernatural powers, and if somebody would come forward and do whatever they did, and then he would prove them wrong, because no one ever cashed that check, and that contest was discontinued in 2015.
Oh, it lasted that long?
Yeah, I think it's because, James Randi died, I think, and it was his foundation. But it was like, that was the thing is, hey, prove to me that you talked to the dead or you made the table float or whatever it was, and I'll give you $1 million if I can't figure out how you did it.
Yeah. You bring on this, you bring on the skeptic guy, and he is just the biggest, nastiest hater. He is He is buck nasty at the Haters Ball 2000. He's calling Chris Stu a fake and like you're just and
charlatan.
Charlatan and all the words. And then so he's out to disprove everything. Chris Stu then begins to like he projectile vomits at one point because he's just so overwhelmed with sickness. He gets ushered away. I love the character of Carmichael because he is kind of like the audience, us being like, well, prove this wrong. Show us how this is wrong.
Now, how do you feel? Because this producer wife, I watched this last night, and she, before this even like got into it, before we got through the mini documentary at the beginning, she guessed the whole crux of the movie and knew what it was. She's really good about all that. And there were certain tropes in this movie, and one that I'm going to talk about is Chris Stu vomits black. How do you feel? Because any devil movie you've ever seen, somebody's throwing up some black shit. Is it time that we do something different?
Probably. This
I know. I know what it would be, but it's like somebody throws up the black shit, and Gavin, if I threw it up into your mouth, now you got it.
Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. It's like a ooze situation, kind of, where it's like, oh no, it's in me now.
I got the ooze.
I think it's okay for this movie because this is very much an homage to The Exorcist. There's a lot of Exorcist-style things in this, and I think the throwing up is just another one of those homages. Mm-hmm. So I give this one a pass because it, other than the callback and the nods to The Exorcist and other demonic possession movies, this is a very original, fun idea.
Yeah, so, and that was like, this is me nitpicking. I was like, man, I wish I would have thought of this idea.
Yeah, I can't believe it hasn't been done before. And if it has been done, I'm sure everybody will let us know in the comments.
Yeah.
But I think that, yeah, it's just, I'm okay with them vomiting the black stuff because it gives the audience a cue like, oh, something is amiss.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll just get him some medical attention in the back. This is like, oh, this is a live show. So it's not like you could be like, let's just cut his segment, have Brent Terhune come on last minute and do 5 minutes of stand-up.
You know? Hey, guys, where are you from? What are you doing?
Yeah.
At one point, they do try that, though. After he's, like, vomits and gets ushered off, they have, like, the warm-up comedian come back and be like, hey, where are you from? What are you doing? Be like, no, I don't think they're ready for this. I don't think they want this right now.
Wasn't that Gus, his announcer?
Yeah. Gus plays the Kevin Eubanks role. He plays the guy from Jimmy Fallon. He kind of plays
Max Weinberg.
Andy Richter style. Yeah.
Yeah. He's kind of the if Jack is talking to anybody, he's talking to Gus. He's kind of almost a comedic foil, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's the one who always gets picked on, who's the butt of the jokes, but has his own zingers and things like that. And I like that relationship. I like that they had the relationship between Gus and Jack, because while this is all happening, Gus is very nervous because he's a man of faith. He's he believes in God, and he's like, this might be going too far. So he is if Carmichael is the skeptic, then Gus is the voice of reason for the actual good side of the supernatural.
Yeah, and Jack is like, ratings. And so is his producer that's always on during the commercials.
Yes. So he's definitely on a one-track mind, even though they're like, okay, this is getting kind of out of hand. And it gets really out of hand when they bring on the character of June, who is a psychologist, and her patient Lily, who has survived a cult of, is it Atraxis?
Personality, I believe. Cult of personality.
This is about CM Punk. But she brings on Lily, who is a girl allegedly possessed by a demon herself. Carmichael does not believe this. And then this is when the movie really takes it up to the spooky Exorcist stuff. Lily knows stuff. And I think Ingrid... go ahead.
Before that, we have like a mini 2 to 3 minute segment of the like that cult of Abraxas. Of how she, Dr. June Ross Mitchell, finds Lily, because we get the cult of Abraxas, and they're doing all kinds of, it appears to be demonic stuff, and they're surrounded by the cops, and they choose to burn themselves down, but there's one survivor, Lily, a.k.a. Megan, from the movie Megan. That, as soon as she walked out, the first time I saw her, I was like, this girl is really big Megan vibes.
Yeah, so Lily's played by Ingrid Torelli, who actually, this is her film debut.
So she was really good in it.
Yeah, she's super good. She definitely plays that innocent girl who's been possessed and is trying to... There's something about an adolescent teen girl being possessed that is so scary, because adolescent teen girls... without being possessed, are the scariest, meanest human beings on the planet. They have no filter to begin with, so if you add the devil to them, it's also, they're going to not only really make you question your faith, but they're also going to say that your TikToks are shitty and you're making bad content.
All I want to do is walk down the goddamn aisle at the grocery store without you doing a prank on me or you dancing.
I'm tired of getting bullied by these teen girls.
Can I just get my Rice-A-Roni, please?
look at this guy, big time comedian. Look how poor he is. Oh, he's a poor.
Cargo shorts. Get out of here, Kevin Smith.
What are those? by the way, you're being pranked in the year 2013.
And they take like a big tote and throw it over my head. And then when I turn around, the guy's like, where did that come from? You know, I hate all those pranks in the store type things.
Just leave people alone. I fucking hate pranks to begin with. Like people, I love Impractical Jokers. Let these people live their fucking lives. Leave them alone, okay?
I want a prank show where it's like, are you Brent Terhune? I'm like, yeah. You're like, your father just passed away. And then it's like for 10 minutes, they let somebody believe it. And you're like, nah, we're just messing with you.
And then he comes up and he like sneaks up behind you like, I gotcha.
Got him. Yeah. You've been, not Rickrolled, but you've been pallbeared. But it's all just that prank. Telling people their loved ones are dead. And then, And then you might wait 2 to 3 months and then come back.
You've been funeraled.
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 Never gonna let you down.
Why is Rick Astley hosting this? Does he have nothing better to do?
I had that one song, folks, and I did some commercials, and now I'm funeraling people.
I would watch that, though.
I would too.
It's the same thing over and over and over again, but you're like, oh, he really misses his grandpa.
Yeah, I mean, I watch Home Alone 1 and 2, and that's the same shit.
So. Look how sad he is when we told him his mom died. Whoa.
And then maybe you could do it, like, with the same person again and be like, look, I know the last one was bad, but this one's for real. And then when it really does happen to somebody, they're like, man, where's the cameras? And then they like bring them into the morgue and they're like, look at this body's fake.
Not even real. I'm going to, they start tickling the corpse. Okay, come on. Come on, Grandpa. Come on. You got
guys.
Me. He's really cold. He's really cold. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll just get in here and you cremate us both. It'll be so funny.
Every prank show should end with somebody going, whatever, just cremate me too, I guess.
That's how the show just ends for good.
Well, they said to do it, so I guess they signed the form.
That was the final episode of Funeral.
How do you feel, though, about the possession scenes where Lily does show off that she is possessed? How do you feel like that's done? And how do you feel like it sets itself apart from like The Exorcist?
I mean, it's pretty simple and it's, you know, it's bare bones. She's, you know, tied to a chair and she's the demon essentially is brought about by the doctor. I don't know what does she doesn't hypnotize it, but she just brings the demon out essentially. Right.
Yeah.
Mr. Wiggles. Mr. Wiggles.
Yeah. Mr. Wiggles is its father. Call me, yeah. Mr. Wiggles. I think it's a good name for a demon. I think it's cool. I think it's also an ode, an homage to the Exorcist, because this demon, Mr. Wiggles, famously Reagan calls her demon Mr. Howdy. So,
oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, so giving the demon like a fun nickname is much better than being like, oh, it's the devil. Be like, can Mr. Wiggles come out and see us now? And then, yeah, I thought that was really well done. I loved the voice stuff with the overlapping voices between Lily and then the demon, and then also mixing in like other characters. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, and you get, not so subtle facial changes of scarring like The Exorcist. The Exorcist is so good. We compare every possession movie to The Exorcist, you know?
Yeah.
And you get like electrical shit going on. You get the theremin going off throughout the show, which is, it's so weird how like the theremin's spooky or like good vibrations.
Yeah.
You know, like the happiest shit in the world or the scariest shit in the world.
Yeah. And the theremin, if people don't know, if you're listening to this episode and you didn't watch the movie, it's like an instrument that you play without touching it.
I thought it was like when you're a virgin and you bust somebody's theremin.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I have my theremin busted.
My theremin's intact. I'm saving my theremin for marriage. That's how you can tell people aren't virgins when they stop making the noise.
Yeah. Hey, I put my hands by it, but not touching it. It's not making any noise.
Uh-oh.
You're a whore.
You haven't made noise for a while now, you whore.
I love that instrument. It's like we should hear more of that.
It's basically just like a woo-hoo. That's the only noise it makes.
But I think you can learn how to, like, air quotes, play it. I don't know. My friend, well, I think you know him, Stuart Huff. I think he has one of those.
Does he really?
I think he does. Yeah. Do you know Stuart at all?
I've met him. Yeah. I've seen him perform. He is Stuart Huff. People, look him up. He is one of the funniest individuals who has ever lived. He is so fucking funny.
Well, he like is a, like a thrifter and like collects weird shit. He's got like a wooden leg collection. He had a podcast called Obsessive Curiosities with Stuart Huff, where it's like literal wooden legs from humans that he bought at thrift stores and stuff. that were, of course, retired. Nobody was sitting there like, I'm down on my luck bad. I'm down bad.
Down bad. Gotta sell my leg.
Yeah. But, like, he collects stuff like that. And he, I think he has a theremin, which is, we should have him on the show, maybe.
Okay, yeah. Be like, bring the, we should have the theremin on the show. We don't care about Stuart Huff. Just have the theremin come on.
But there's all these tricks that are happening. She levitates at one point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you get all the tricks that you would assume somebody would have when they're possessed by a demon.
Yeah, she's playing all the hits. She's got spooky voices. She's levitating. She's saying stuff about people's loved ones.
There's blood.
Yeah, and I think it's great. I think it's very well done. I think it's very scary, that shot where you just see her eye through her hair, and her eye is changed to almost like a deadite type eye. That's super good. That's a super good shot. And the cinematography in this, besides from just being the 70s aesthetic, it's got some creative shots in it where I was very much like, oh, there's definitely a change in the tone of the movie once she starts showing that she's possessed, where you're like, oh, this is when we're when the trains are moving, we ain't stopping.
This is, I would say this movie is a slow burn, but it's really quick. Like, even the stuff that leads up to like the action is still interesting, you know?
Yeah, because you feel like you're watching an actual talk show, and I think that really adds to the movie, that they make it feel like an actual talk show, because you want to see the next segment, and it's built so well. And it's not really a slow burn. It's kind of slow in the beginning, but then once it hits, it's like we are off to the races.
I don't even think it's slow in the beginning. I just think the action is all at the end, which, I mean, a lot of movies are that, but then sometimes it's a slog to get to that shit, you know?
Yeah. The scene that made me go, oh shit, wasn't even this scene with Lily. It was a scene where Carmichael is trying to show how she did all that, and hypnotizes the audience.
Yeah, because we get her being possessed in the chair. Well, first, I like, even before they do that, they're like, we're going to talk to the devil right after these messages. Right after from Crest. Again, it's all about paying those bills, baby. So they do the possession scene, and then, you know, immediately after that, Carmichael's like, I'd like to refute three or four of those things. Then they come back, and Jack is like, you got 5 minutes to disprove what just happened.
Yeah, and he manages to hypnotize the entire audience, including Gus the sidekick, finds out that Gus is afraid of worms. And then this is where it goes from supernatural to a very gory horror movie.
He starts dragging his ass across the carpet because of the worms.
Oh, he needs some of that dewormer. But he's afraid of the worms that Heidi Klum dressed as for Halloween.
Well, and like he's like, at first, he doesn't snap his fingers, but then he's like, oh, you got something on your neck. And he's like, I don't know if it's like combination bleeding, but then there's worms coming out of him. He rips his own stomach out, and he's got a belly full of worms.
Yeah, and you're just like, what is happening? It's very gross. And then his eye pops out. He's got like a giant worm coming out of his eye.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, this is, it very much takes up like the scenes in Invasion of the Body Snatchers or Poltergeist, where it's a very calm movie until people are then actually ripping their faces off.
Yeah, tone shift.
Yeah, totally shift. But then we snap our fingers and we're back and Gus is fine. And Carmichael uses this as proof to like show like people are hypnotized. We're going to watch the footage. He was never in any danger. Mm-hmm. You guys are all full of shit.
Well, and one of the people on the Discord watch along that we just had posed a question is, have you guys ever seen a hypnotist? Or, and you know, for us comedians, we've opened up for hypnotists. So we talked about it, but we'll have to reiterate it here. Do you even believe in hypnotism, Gavin?
I believe in the power of suggestion. Mm-hmm. I have friends who do hypnosis shows, and I don't think I would never go up to them and be like, you're full of shit. I think people are very open to the power of suggestion. I think hypnotism is real. I think you can be hypnotized, but you have to be willing to do it. If you go in thinking it's all bullshit, you can't be hypnotized.
Yeah, I think it's, you have to be open to it. Because a weird thing is I've never technically opened up for a hypnotist. Because when you see a hypnotism show, they bring 12 people on stage. And then, you know, we're going to have a rap battle. And they make one guy the Chinese rapper. So then he's rapping, but it's Chinese. But he doesn't know Chinese, but he's hypnotized and all that. But I had a weird thing where I was, like, hired to help one hypnotist not teach others hypnotism. They already knew how to do that, but to help write and form their acts as a hypnotist, to like make jokes or figure out what is our angle with the, what is my character as a hypnotist, so then I can do my show. So I watched a lot of hypnotism live in like a club setting, and it's like either it's real or this guy goes from town to town 5 nights a week finding 12 people on Craigslist to pretend to be a Chinese rapper and not say shit about it, you know?
Listen, I'll do anything for my SAG card. Mm-hmm. If having to pretend to be a Chinese rapper in Toledo, Ohio is how I do it, then I guess I will be on the, I will get on stage for the Raven, okay?
It would be weird, the Sandman or whatever, you know, which I think is a real one, and I don't know which one that is, but I'm not talking shit about the Sandman, but the ECW wrestlers I'm talking about. But, it would be weird to like see the Toledo, Ohio show and then the Columbus, Ohio show and be like, was that the guy from Toledo and then the woman from Toledo, you know?
It's like the Partridge Family. They just all get on the hypnosis bus.
Yeah, come on, get happy.
So I've opened for a hypnotist before, mm-hmm. and I respect the art of hypnotism. Please don't have regular comedians go up and open for your hypnotist, because they are not there to see you. They do not give a shit about the little jokes you have. They want to see mm-hmm. their friends say something racially insensitive under hypnosis. That's what they wanted. They wanted to be like, I want to fuck a horse or something.
Nay. Was the mayor there? The mayor was there.
The mayor's wife like, oh, he's going to fuck a horse now.
You know, there's one guy that wasn't even hypnotized. He just wanted to let it all out. Man, I said, you're the mailman, and it's getting real hot in here. And you're like, well, let me tell you about these Mexicans. You're like, what the fuck? that would be a fun sketch. It's just...
The only problem I had with the hypnotist that I opened for, he was very nice. But after all of my sets, he's like, I got some pointers for you about your set.
Unsolicited.
I was like, man, I guess if I just hypnotize them, I guess they'll like me like they like you. Am I right? But yeah, so I think you should open with a different joke. Really got to get the crowd. I like that you did. I'm like, man, you a hypnotist. We in different businesses. We're on the same show, man.
That'd be funny if you went up and hypnotized people before he hypnotized people.
I told him, I was like, you know what would be really funny? You should play Hypnotized by Notorious B.I.G. before you go up.
Biggie, Biggie, Biggie. I don't know if that's Hypnotized, but...
It is. I think so. Can't you see? I love the way you hypnotize me.
Yeah. So I don't even know where we are anymore. We're talking about Carmichael and he's debunking it. And of course, Lily says... well, first they played the tape back and realize that mass hypnosis wasn't actually, you know, worms coming out. That was just a mass hypnosis. And they actually see what Gus was doing is, you know, tearing his clothes off, but there's no worms and
pretty
there's
hot,
no
though.
Disgusting. Yeah. God damn. He was all Hulk Hogan. By the way, the guy that was Gus, I said, watching last night could play Mario.
Reese Altieri is the actor. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
If Chris Pratt ever wants to stop voicing Mario, and they're like, we got to go back and do a live action one.
Yeah.
It's a Mia. It's Reese Tori.
Yeah. I mean, he does look like, I don't remember the guy's name. He's from Roger Rabbit.
But, Bob Hoskins.
Yeah. Like, he looks, and that's not necessarily a compliment. You know, you look like Mario.
I'm mad that they never did a Mario movie with James Gandolfini as Mario.
Yeah.
A different
kind of
Italian.
Oh, they fucking Goombas over here.
A fucking different kind of Italian, am I right? Oh.
There's too much gabagool in the goddamn drain.
I want James Gandolfini as Mario, and then I want the actor that played Pauly to be Luigi. Yeah.
Tony Sirico.
Yo, Mario, where we go fucking, oh!
Hey, T, there's so much shit in this fucking pipe. You're disgusted, Pauly. I think anybody, you would just take the Sopranos actors and put them in any other thing.
Yeah.
It's so much funnier.
Carmela as Peach, Michael as Michael Imperioli as Toad. Just, let's do it.
Tony, I'm in another castle.
Did you hear Bowser died?
Yeah, they kill off. Well, I was going to do a big spoiler if you've not seen this 30-year-old show. Or somebody dies on the turnpike. Toad's turnpike.
She died on Rainbow Road. You hear about this?
Hey, I'm not, God, what's his name? I'm just saying he's driving down on the Rainbow Road, if you know what I'm saying.
Vito? We're talking
Vito's
about Vito.
Been driving down the railroad road.
We're spoiling all the Sopranos right now. Vito is a gay on the show. Know if you know this, but
I'm just maybe made a wrong turn on the Rainbow Road. You know what I'm saying, T?
I'm just saying it's not against the fucking Bible. I'm a fucking Catholic, okay?
Allow me to go bang these hooas. One of my favorite lines in the Sopranos. This is, I guess, we've already spoiled it, but Vito gets caught giving a guy a blowjob in the parking lot, and somebody says, maybe it was just a phase, and Christopher goes, sucking a cock, and just looks at him, sucking a cock.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but James Gandolfini was on after the exorcism.
But then, so, Lily's like, well, if you believe the cameras and you believe this bullshit, well, let's play the tape. And you can see on the tape that everything is very real. All the stuff they saw was that she did levitate. And then Jack is like, hey, play that in slow motion. I think I saw something. And they go frame by frame. And there's a shot of his dead wife as a ghost behind him. And that's when spooky. It gets real spooktastic. And apparently, they hid his wife in shots throughout the movie, and I saw her in like a mirror at one point. I was like, that on purpose? So I love movies that you can rewatch and you can find little Easter eggs of like things hidden.
Midsommar is like that.
Yeah,
you can see Jack's dead wife in Midsommar.
It's long-term storytelling.
On Reddit too, somebody was, and I guess the wife was in the reflection of the watch that was either on the table or used for the hypnotism. And that's, again, where now you know you can go back and watch the movie and try to find those.
Yeah, which I think is fun when a horror movie gives you that rewatchability by hiding things in there. So I like it. Of course, it's a thing The Exorcist did as well with hiding Pazuzu in like the hood of the oven.
I want to get an old Isuzu car. And put a P on the front of it and then, like, make it purple and black.
God, this is such...
Drive a Pazuzu.
That's such a deep cut reference that one person will be like, big Exorcist fan, are
you? Nice. Nice.
Nice. Also, this was
also
worth
you
it.
Were, like, really small trucks.
Whenever you drive your Pazuzu, you're just wearing the black cloak and getting out in the fog near a lamppost.
The tailpipe just shoots out green shit. Yeah, I do park out, and then I'm in the under that lamppost. That's good.
If anybody who was new to this podcast is still listening, we're sorry. We've tried to alienate the rest of you. We tried to drive you all away to a very core demographic.
Most episodes are like this. So.
This is most episodes, so welcome aboard. We got wrestling references. We're going to reference magician shows from the mid-90s. Sopranos
next
fan
we're doing,
fiction.
We're just watching all those magic shows.
We're just watching magic shows. We're talking about fan fiction. We're fan casting Sopranos characters as Mario. This is the dumbest fucking podcast. Thank you for giving us your money on patreon.com/ they're coming to get you.
Driving down that Rainbow Road.
Oh!
But so then it all hell kind of breaks loose because we see the ghost of his wife, and then Carmichael loses his shit because he's like, you were in on it, you know?
Yeah.
And at that point, it wouldn't surprise most people that the guy trying to get ratings is in on it.
Yeah. I mean, I know for one thing, the news and media never lies for ratings, so it would be the first time it ever happened. ever. But luckily, it is all real, like it always is. Mm-hmm. And then you have the gore portion of this where Lily freaks out. She snaps Gus's head back. She also, spoilers, by the way. I meant to spoil everything. She snaps Gus's head back. June gets her throat cut by getting choked by her necklace, mm-hmm. which was good. Carmichael just gets fucking immolated with telekinesis.
Well, even before that, he's like trying to debunk it. And then he pledges his undying allegiance to whatever this thing is. And he hands out the check and it melts in his hand. And then he himself gets melted or whatever happens to him.
Yeah, with pyrokinesis. I said telekinesis, but it's pyrokinesis.
Ah, you idiot.
I know, sorry. It's actually Dr. Frankenstein's monster with the pyrokinesis.
You were thinking Carrie, and really this is Firestarter.
Oh, God, you're right. And then you have the big, and her head fucking splits open. Her head splits open, and it's a very striking image. I've never seen a demon portrayed like that before.
Yeah, that's new.
Yeah, that's new, and I loved it. I loved that scene.
And the audience is running away, and also throughout the whole show, we get like little cuts to the audience, and we see some masked people dressed in costume throughout the whole audience.
Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that. Are those people from the cult?
Yeah, they are. There was the skeleton. There was, I think, a Frankenstein's monster for playing that. There was a mummy. Somebody else. There was a few of them. There's one quick scene where they go on a break, and then they're going to have like the costumes parade, I think, during the show. And you see all those costume people in the back of the set. But then everybody scatters, and then we go into a hallucination of Jack.
Yeah, where he's back on earlier episodes of the show, where he's kind of, he's swearing through sketches. He doesn't know what's mm-hmm. happening. He's going back in time. And then the big reveal, spoiler, if you haven't seen it yet, of course, I'm sorry that you've listened this far, but it's revealed that to get his ratings up, he has basically sold his wife's soul to this cult, right?
And that's my understanding is, and I think some people on Reddit were saying maybe he didn't even remember doing it, but he was willing to sacrifice his wife because there's even a point in the show where she said, we met when I was doing whatever performance and he came backstage and there were so many naked people and he was blushing and even he's blushing now. And maybe, I think somebody on Reddit was like, maybe he made that sacrifice even before he met her. So it was like a long term, he meets the girl, they fall in love, and this got like such a long drawn out torture for him, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not clear, and we just watched it, so it might, you know, after other rewatches or time to think, it might be more clear. But either way, I think that the crux is he sold his wife to whatever entity to get higher ratings to beat Johnny Carson.
Yeah, and that's sometimes how you got to do it. I know a lot of TikTok stars have sold their souls for their fame. I know Charlie D'Amelio on TikTok, all of her dances are for the devil. She talks about it a lot. So
if they do this, if they do the Rockefeller sign,
that's for the Illuminati, I think.
Illuminati.
Oh, but yeah, I love this ending. And then it kind of ends. What is the phrase he says at the end, though?
Before we get to that, it like cuts to him at that ritual in front of all the masked creatures. There's the owl there, and they're like chanting, and he's got to drink the cup of something, so some kind of sacrifice. The guy from the Abraxas cult is there, and then it opens up, and he sees his wife, mm-hmm. Cancer-ridden in the bed, and you know she knows that he sold her out, and she's like, "Do me one last favor." And he kills her with the dagger, and then it cuts out, and he's killed Lily with the dagger.
Yeah.
Which, that part of it is also weird to me, of like, if you know this guy sold you out, I'd be a little bit more pissed. if I had cancer and was dying, and my soul was sold to whoever, you know?
Yeah. Also, stabs are so slow. Like, we've seen that a lot. Like, we saw that in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, where it's like, kill me. And it's like, could you not stab me the slowest anybody's ever been stabbed, please?
Yeah, you're trying to put me out of my misery. And boy, are you causing me misery.
Boy, are you fucking this up.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then at the end, it cuts out, and he's like the only one standing in the studio. There's sirens going off.
Yeah, and he stabbed Lily. He stabbed Lily.
Yeah, in the chair. And then it kind of zooms out. And then he says, dreamer here, awake. Dreamer here, awake. And I wrote that down because I don't, I asked our patron people when we watched it. I don't know if that has any significance at all.
Yeah, and you watched it twice, so I thought maybe it was a callback to earlier in the movie. But apparently, no, it's just something
that he says.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's any significance or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, so... maybe people will let us know afterwards if it means something. I tried looking at that phrase. I guess it's the lyrics to a song, maybe?
But. Okay. But I don't know. So how did you feel overall? Because I think you can kind of at least guess where the movie was going. Could you have, like, just seeing the first 20 minutes, could you guess kind of where the movie was going?
No, I didn't guess that at all. And maybe I'm not as smart as producer wife, which probably not.
That's true.
But I liked being along for the ride. This movie was very, very good. It lived up to my expectations. I know a lot of horror right now is like being heralded as like the best, right? We're in like a real golden age of horror, especially in this first part of this year. You've got a ton of movies coming out. But this lived up to my expectations. And I love it when a movie... not only lives up to, but surpasses it what it is. So this right now is probably my favorite horror movie I've seen this year.
I think it's fun.
Yeah. It's a fun movie with a good spin on a familiar story.
If we're just like kind of painting what happens after the movie, what do you think happens?
I think he probably goes to jail.
But all of it happened. Surely they'd have to be like, well, that guy's head just didn't explode. You know, you didn't do that, Jack.
I don't know. I think maybe he. It could be a situation where like the cameras manipulate to make him look like he did all of it. I guess.
Devil could do whatever.
The devil's so hot right now. He does whatever he kind of wants. Hot. He's so hot right now.
Is this, I just said it was fun and you agreed, so is this a party movie?
I don't know if it's a party movie. I don't think it's like as over the top and as fun as a party movie, but you could definitely put it on at a party for the right group of people, I think.
Is this movie scary?
I think no, but I could see people being very scared by it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think it's scary, but I don't know that it's like over the top trying to be scary.
Yeah.
It's just trying to tell the story, you know?
And for people that hate jump scares, there's no real jump scares in this. It's all a very slow burn type, a fun burn type of movie where the scares are earned and they all build on each other. There's never any scene where it's just like, spooky thing pops out, which I appreciate.
What's your oh shit moment?
Oh shit moment probably gonna be when her head splits open.
Okay, I think mine was when Gus's head just twists.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good one.
And if you like this, what other movies should people watch?
Obviously, The Exorcist is super good. I think Ty West's The House of the Devil is a really fun one. That's kind of like a 70s cult throwback as well. And then let's go, Immaculate. Immaculate just came out with Sydney Sweeney. Mm-hmm. If you need more cult devil stuff, Immaculate is definitely one I'd recommend.
I'm going to say, I haven't seen Immaculate, but, the other ones are accurate. And I'm also going to say Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah. Rosemary's Baby is a good one. So there you go. Our next, I think this episode is probably going to drop in between our remake episodes of Friday the 13th and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So Texas Chainsaw Massacre will be out next week. I don't know where we're going to do after that, but this is a lot of fun. Again, if you want to hang out with us over on Patreon, patreon.com/ They're Coming to Get You. You can watch movies with us sometimes like we did for this. Everybody had a great time, and we would love to have you over there with us as well.
Yeah. So thanks for being here. If you're joining us for the first time, and if you've been around for a while, hey, man, thanks for being here.
Yeah. Go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We appreciate it.
They're coming to get you.
Barbara!
They're coming to get you. They're coming for you, Barbara.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.